Winter had come to this town, and boy was it a doozy. Record lows day after day with the thermostat threatening 40. The population combed their closets for cast-off garments. Scarves, once considered purely decorative items, found their true calling. Gloves and earmuffs, which only ever saw use as props for holiday photos, now adorned the natives. Faux fur of every hue and print abounded, transforming the masses into a menagerie fit for a zoo. As for this detective, well, I was in pure bliss. The crisp climate was a godsend. Whatever the opposite of seasonal affective disorder was, I had it. It was all I could do not to ho-ho-ho in the face of all the bah-humbugging. I wasn't bothered a whit being summoned forth by a potential client. Secret rendezvous were routine in my role as sleuth to the stars. My office had become a campsite for paparazzi posing the question, why would so-and-so want to hire Ken Allen? If a client wanted privacy, clandestine meetings were required, which made their choice of setting puzzling. Chateau de Loire was anything but inconspicuous. The luxury hotel was the closest thing my fair city had to a historic landmark. Architects often outlived their creations in this town. The birthplace of showbiz was built on an evergreen graveyard, layered on the bones of those who failed in their quest for the immortality of fame. The name itself, Chateau de Loire, is grammatically incorrect, of course. It should be Chateau de la Loire. It's unclear whether Arnold Horowitz, the founder, was ignorant of this little detail or thumbing his nose at the French. Either way, I liked de Loire better. Chateau de Loire looked like what castles became after royalty stopped fretting so much over being besieged. A seven-story fairy tale compilation of witch hat towers and crenulated turrets, complete with meant-to-be-holy but actually hot statuary. The arched doors and windows promised to transport you to another world. You even passed under a portcullis on entering. The current visitors reinforced the illusion. The lobby was packed wall-to-wall with people decked out in armor of all varieties, from a knight's full suit to leather ensembles more suited to BDSM than battle. They carried an array of weapons, swords, axes, bows, and staves. While I wasn't familiar with this particular species, I knew the genus well. Superfans. The kind who traveled from far and wide to attend conventions like the one I was about to join. A celebration of all things the lands beyond. The biggest television show ever. A cultural phenomenon that had exponentially gained steam over the last 9 years, shaping pop culture from fashion trends to children's names. With the 10th and final season set to start filming in a week, the atmosphere at Chateau de Loire crackled with anticipation. Prior to heading overseas, the cast and crew dropped by this town for one last marketing hurrah. The most I'd ever charged at a con was $40, and I had to be framed for murder to rate that. Photo op and autograph sessions from the stars of The Lands Beyond ran hundreds of dollars ahead. Exclusive events, like sharing a meal, stretched into the thousands. From what I gathered from the endless ads and ever-present merchandise, the show was a souped-up version of Dallas with sword fights. You'd think I'd know the basics about the program that had defined the last decade, but I'd somehow escaped its lure. Despite my past as a celebrity personal trainer, I didn't know any of its stars. It was shot overseas with mostly foreign actors who went home after filming. And to be frank, sword and sorcery wasn't my thing. But try explaining that to a diehard fan. They compare The Lands Beyond to Shakespeare, if only the bard had possessed the creative vision to include dragons. While I managed to negotiate the labyrinth of humanity without contracting tetanus, I did catch plenty of glares. Cavorting around in slacks and a buttoned-up blazer was breaking their immersion. But to people in the know, I was also cosplaying, after a fashion. Once, and only the once, I played Jove Brand, super spy extraordinaire, which provided me with a gimmick for my second act as a private eye. Hiring a D-list super sleuth held a certain appeal among celebrities. I had been one of them, technically. I understood the tightrope they walked. And, more important, I knew how to keep my mouth shut.